Welcome back, Mr. John Albert Mpofu. We're now getting into our last stretch. We're going to ask you to continue and conclude your cross-examination so that you can proceed to allowing your placing matters on record between now until the adjournment of the meeting. Thank you. I hand over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Mr. Chan. You back?
Can you hear me now?
All right. Okay, just we're going to cover two or three issues, but I just want to round off the previous point, which I said really symbolizes the kind of evidence that you and the other employees have given, which I find quite disturbing. So we agree that really the all of you, well, I don't want you to speak for other people, yourself. You said you've come here to tell the committee that the public protector intimidated, harassed, and victimized you or other people, correct?
That's correct.
And we know that I don't want us to go back to that confusion about describing those terms, yeah. So I'm just trying to unpack them now. So effectively, we agree that the public protector never came to that office and beat people up or got there and she was drunk or all sorts of things like that. All these problems that you have with her is because she was driving performance, correct?
It's how she was driving that performance.
Yes, I accept that. It's how she was driving performance. But all the problems that you and the others have are about driving performance, the manner of driving performance. It's not like she went there and she was stabbing people or doing things like that, correct?
Well, PP can be a very soft-spoken person. It's what she says. It's what she says and how she says it in her actions. That can be an equivalent. Well, let me not compare it to driving around it the way that you have placed it. But within a work environment, it's how it's
I don't think you understand my question. All these bad things, whatever they are that she did, were aimed at improving performance, correct?
Yes, that was her aim.
Yeah.
But that's not how
I'm not underestimating or undermining the fact that you're saying is the how. But all I'm saying is that all the problems that you have with her are related to her, the manner in which she was driving performance, service delivery, and all these performance indicators, correct?
Correct.
Now, and you say that one of the issues is that, okay, Advocate Shabalala asked you about yourself now. You were phoning people in the wee hours of the morning, correct?
Not in the wee hours of the morning, but late at night, yes. Very late at night.
Pardon?
Yes, I was calling people.
Yeah, in ungodly hours, correct?
That's correct.
Yes. Now, so that was a victimization in your language, correct?
No, I wasn't victimizing people.
Oh. So when it's you who, I thought you were saying victimization entails this idea of interfering with people's private lives.
Yes, I did say, you see, we are the ones who have to deliver the work. So PP was not calling people in ungodly hours. I was explaining or describing the work environment itself, that because of these tight deadlines that are often prescribed, then you have to get things done. Yes, it included calling people in those during those odd hours. In other words, for me, who is based here in head office, and also my position, and who sits in these meetings, then it then translates in that way that you affect each and everyone. That is why I was saying, while yes, the objective was to drive performance, but how you then drive performance, because the more harsh you are, the more threatening you are, people are going to then deliver that product by the time that you said, product by when. But what is the quality of that product? Then it affects everyone along the chain.
Okay. Now, we've gone through the quality. I don't know whether you didn't hear the question or you're dodging it. I'm saying you, Mr. Jan, when you phone people in the wee hours of the morning, would you count from their perspective that you were harassing and victimizing them, correct? Because they were sleeping at home and
yes, indeed, they could see it that way.
Yeah.
They could.
Yes. So
it could be justified. Yes.
But no, fair enough. So but when you were victimizing and harassing those people, it was because you were feeling pressure to deliver, correct?
Correct.
So it's not because you are a bad person yourself. You were calling them in those odd hours of the morning because you wanted them to deliver so that you can deliver, correct?
That is correct.
Yes. So the same applies to the PP. Do you know that she also has pressure to deliver? Just as you have pressure maybe from her, and the people you were waking up in the morning had pressure from you, and they probably phoned other people as well and woke them up in the odd hours of the morning. But the public protector also had pressure to deliver, and she did deliver, as we know. You accept that?
Yes, I accept the...
Good.
But also I want to say, yes, everybody is under pressure, but when one has explained why a particular milestone has not been achieved, and then it is not accepted at that level, and the deadline does not change, that is what then leads to this ripple effect of putting pressure on each and everyone. So yes, I agree, everybody including the PP is under pressure, but when
thank you, that's what I'm saying. Yes ma'am, I'm saying therefore, so if you are saying victimization, so PP, insofar as she was also acting under pressure, she was a victim herself, correct?
No, that's
like the people you were phoning. The people you were phoning were your victims. You don't agree that the people you phoned at 3 in the morning, okay, sorry, I don't know what the time is. The people you phoned at the odd hours were, at face value, victims of your phone call, correct?
No, I've agreed to that, but I don't agree that PP is a victim.
Oh, I see. So the only victims were the people you phoned and the people they phoned and you. And that's why it stops.
You know why I say that I do not consider PP as the victim? It's because we are in control of that. We are in control with the main focus on producing quality. If there's an explanation that is provided and that deadline does not change, you end up putting pressure on each and every other person to then produce work that may not be of good quality.
All right. Since you say you followed Ms. Mukhaladi's evidence, you accept that what you are saying is false. That's not what happened. Actually, on many occasions, people had to determine their own deadlines.
No, I disagree with it.
Since you followed Ms. Mukhaladi's evidence, do you accept that she conceded on that point? That, and I think Ms. Mutisi as well, that deadlines, I think in the case of Ms. Mutiti, we saw some deadlines that were moved like 25 times, yeah. But that deadlines did get moved. So it's not true what you are saying, that the deadlines were immutable. Because we have live examples of Ms. Mukhaladi, for example, when she got her Audi letter, she had determined her own deadline and did not meet it.
I hope you can hear me because you are now frozen on my side. Can you hear me?
Okay, I can hear you, yes.
Yes, the screen is frozen. I will continue until you stop me.
No problem.
Yes. No, I don't. I think it will have to be contextualized in specifically so, because the deadlines for backlog matters. One would sit in meetings and then those deadlines would propose that this is the deadline based on the work that still needs to be done. And that is where people would say, no, but that is too far. And that is why I have said, even though I had agreed, but it was at the insistence. Because ultimately, one would say, yes, I've agreed to this deadline, but that is not necessarily the deadline that I would have set based on the investigation and the work that still needed to be done.
Okay. Okay. Let me round it off like this because I don't want to tit for tat with you. I refute that people like Ms. Mukhaladi, who agreed here, and you said you followed her evidence, considered that some of the deadlines that she failed to meet were set by her, not anyone else, by her, Ms. Mukhaladi.
No, I'm not refuting that. I was just explaining. Yes.
No. All right. And Mr. Tebele, who also gave evidence here, you know him.
Yeah, I know him.
Yes, he also testified that people at times would give their own deadlines and fail to meet them. So let's leave the issue of the ones that were not changed. What about the ones where the people set the deadlines themselves and still not meet them? Do you still think that's fine?
No, I don't think that's fine if they set those deadlines.
Yes. So therefore, in the instances like in the case of Ms. Mukhaladi, where she had missed, I think, 4 or 5 deadlines until came the point where she set her own deadline and she still missed it, you would accept that there must be consequences?
Depending, obviously, on the reasons for still not meeting the deadline that she has set herself, then I would agree there should be consequences.
So then we must know... If we do that, then it means we'll go back to the dark days before Advert Mkhwebane, where matters would last for 5 years, correct? Because then it will be, well, depending. I'm sure even Ms. Madonsela and the others wanted the backlog to be slashed, but people were giving this depending for 5 years. So at what point then should we say that this matter must be delivered? You cannot be giving us these excuses for 5 years.
Yes, you have correctly used the word excuses, because that is what it was seen as, excuses, instead of listening objectively and view it objectively why it has not been achieved. I fully agree with you. Where those reasons are not legitimate, then yes, there must be consequence management. I agree with you. Where those are justifiable, then the consequence management is not the right approach. That is what
That's fine. Good. And we're not here debating matters of style. You accept that different managers or different leaders will have different styles, correct?
I accept, and that is critical to the success also of an institution.
Yes. Okay. And the PP's style is to be rigid on deadlines. And I think that's one we all know. That, but that's how she has achieved what she has achieved, correct?
Rigid, but at what cost?
Yes.
Because like
so,
you said,
now you're going back to my theory. I said there always will be a cost, ma'am. Remember, that's where we started. You said you don't understand what I meant by cost or price. I'm saying that's the point I'm making. So at that cost, I'm saying she, with all the costs included, has achieved what is that she has achieved by being rigid and sticking to the deadlines. You accept that, okay.
Yes, and,
now,
and rigid in this, if you may allow me, rigid in this context, I am implying it to the change, the service delivery that you were talking about, that it starts here because this we can control and say we are doing it correctly, close to perfect, if not perfect, to change that service delivery you were talking about.
Yeah. All right, well, but you can only work with what you have. If you have so many employees and so much money, those are the constraints. That's what I tried to explain that to you, but I don't think it's fine. Let's leave that here. Okay, when it comes to the deadlines, you accept that you've already accepted to Advocate Tshabalala that the deadlines were not necessarily the PP's deadlines. Some of them were deadlines that taken ownership for yourself, correct?
Yes, correct.
And sorry, ma'am. And you also accepted that some of those deadlines were even imposed by Parliament, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And so those deadlines cannot be attributed to the public protector. And you said that the 30-day deadline imposed by Parliament on EMEA matters is unrealistic, right?
Yes, that is my view based on the time it has taken us to conduct
research. Yes, I know. Yeah, you explained that to Advocate Tshabalala. Okay, so what would you say is realistic? What should Parliament consider with for EMEA? Two months, 3 months?
I don't know if it's really for this this sitting. But on average, we have found that an average of conducting your EMEA matters ranges between, say, 7 months, 7 months and more. So 7 months EMEA with a dedicated team doing that investigation or conducting that investigation, because we are still using the very same resource.
And this matter, that matter has been communicated many times to Parliament, correct? The issue of the 30 days, even by Advocate Matonzela, I think, correct?
Yes. Correct, correct.
And for the past 10 years or so, Parliament has not shifted that deadline, correct?
Well, it has not changed, yes.
So they've been rigid with that deadline themselves, correct?
Well, I would say rigid in the sense that the Act has not changed, but there has been flexibility in that when the first report is or letter is sent notifying the Speaker, then we are not able to finalize that investigation within 30 days or even the President, where it has to be escalated to the President. We have been given that indulgence to continue with the investigation and complete it and provide that report. And it is the same thing that we've also been asking in this instance, that as we would also explain to Parliament that we are not able to meet this deadline because of 1, 2, 3, the same would also request of the public protector that indeed,
yeah,
there is a rigid time frame.
Thank you.
But
and the evidence of the public protector will be that that's exactly what she has done as well. There's one example, you may or may not know about it, of the failure report, which was promised to her, I think, in November 2017, but was eventually produced in 2018. Exactly, because of what you're saying, that even though there was a deadline, but if it was, it could not be met, it could not be met for valid reasons. That happened. That's what the public protector will say. Are you saying that never happened? She'll be lying.
No, I would not say that. I do not know what happened on the Friday.
All right. And you agree that to get these outcomes, you have to crack the whip now and again, correct?
Of course, yes, I agree.
And you have actually said, I think at page 4368, Jefferson.
What page?
4368.
Okay.
He said, I do not take issue with management cracking the whip where performance has been substandard. In some cases, it appears shocking what has been done to investigate certain complaints that have been received or the length of time it has taken to get certain complaints. Do you still agree with that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And then at paragraph 47. Which is 4360. You say that you share the concern of the executive authority, that's the public protector, and other EMs, that the eradication of backlogs and preventing and the accumulation of further backlogs must remain priority for an office such as PPSA. Agree with that?
Yes, I do.
And you say, in order to deal with the backlog and move investigations along from time to time, various mechanisms have been embarked upon since my time at PPSA in 2019. And those various mechanisms are the one that you and I have discussed of deadlines, pressure, working long hours, correct?
No, mechanisms.
To cut the backlog. It's what we've already discussed, some of the, what we call the cost or the price of getting that done, correct?
No, what I've meant here, because mechanisms, if you are referring to the budgetary constraints, I'm talking about measures that have been put in place to try and deal with the backlog. That's what I mean here.
All right. And then one of the good things the PP did was to get COO to drive some of these issues, correct?
That's correct.
And you have been happy, for example, with the fact that the COO managed to contribute to the slashing of the backlog as well, correct?
Correct.
And but that intervention itself was done by the PP in a way, because she's the one who identified that gap and delegated those tasks, correct?
Correct.
So you still haven't had a chance to read the motion of Ms. Mazzoni that you came here to support, correct? All right. Uh, And sorry, just to round it off, you've testified as well that one of the innovations that was created was this thing called full bench, correct? But even that full bench, then there's another one called what, leadership. Okay, they, even that full bench could not function optimally because people were not performing or meeting the deadlines, or they were submitting late, correct?
Yes, it's correct in that since there would be a deadline for submission, there would be a time set for full bench. Some of those matters would not be ready to serve at full bench for reasons that are already articulated, that they would go back. So yes, so then full bench would not have, members of full bench would not have read in advance, which is the intention of full bench, to read, do some form of quality assurance, so that then full bench can be there can be full participation in at full bench. So that was the challenge.
The problem, yes. So again, even with full bench, in order to get it to work for its intended purposes, there would have been a need to crack the whip, correct?
Again, it comes down to this issue of tight deadlines and versus what needs to be done. Because if the calendar for full bench is already set and it cannot be shifted on all those matters that are supposed to be presented at full bench, then there will be pressure to finalize and submit at full bench. But quality will still be compromised. So again, the cracking of the whip. Yes, the whip can be cracked, but it's the reason why that matter cannot serve at full bench that I want to emphasize. They should not be undermined.
Yes, no, on that we agree, Mr. Chan. So obviously there's a limit beyond which one cannot go even in pushing performance, correct? There are human factors.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. I mean, for example, you were here on the 13th of September when the chairperson insisted that we continue with the hearing when the public protector was sick. You would say that that's now, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't crack the whip beyond the human, the level of humanness, correct?
Well, it may be unreasonable for me to be expected to respond in that context.
No, I'm just making an example. I'm saying, okay, forget about the chairperson. If you had a deadline and you wanted to achieve something, and the person said, look, here's a medical certificate, I can't do it. These are the kinds of things you're talking about, of that, if they, you still...
Sorry, I've lost sound.
And,
I lost sound for a few seconds.
Yeah, yes, you'll have to repeat, Advocate Mpofu, because, you know, that's what happened in the system when you mentioned the chairperson. You quickly freeze. Please repeat when you include him in the examples. He is frozen.
Frozen again.
Now, that's just a lesson. We'll wait for him until he's back. You can take some water, Mr. Jani, in the meantime. That's
recording stopped.
It's called water Audi.
Thank you, Jameson.
So, Ms. Tejane, okay, it's not true what I said. I'm going to talk about the chest cancer. When we got frozen, I was saying to you, just as an example, the kinds of things that you are saying, you agree there must be cracking of the whip, that there must be performance, and there must be, pressure put. But you are saying that it must not go beyond certain levels of humanity, correct? Or humanness?
Yes, I say there must be fairness. There must be objective.
There must be a limit, yes. That's the central thesis of what you're saying. Not that you are against cracking of the whip per se, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yes, and then that's why I was using that example, saying you yourself now, you wouldn't, for example, insist, if you said to somebody, look, you are going to be here, you are going to give evidence on the 13th of September or whatever date, and that person happens to be on their deathbed, you wouldn't insist on that happening, or to give you a report, and so on. Or these people you were phoning at the odd hours, if they said, look, I'm in hospital, I'm lying in hospital, you wouldn't harass them further than that, correct?
Indeed, that's what I did not do that.
That's the kind of disgraceful conduct you wouldn't do. Yeah, okay. And you wouldn't...
Advocate Bofu, I hope it's not still within the context of before we parted, especially when we use disgraceful.
Yeah, it's within the context of meeting deadlines, yeah.
Yes, because yes, the word disgraceful is not what I would use, but what
okay,
I would
use. All right. Fine. So if you, let's say it was you now, let's say it was you sitting on the deathbed. And if I phoned you and I said, no, I want my thing, I want my report, you wouldn't think that would be disgraceful? You think that would be admirable?
Yeah, maybe disgraceful is a strong word. However,
let's leave disgraceful. You would think that would be a horrible thing to do, to phone you on your deathbed at ICU and say that you must give me a report. Wouldn't you?
Yes, I would think that's fine. I can live with it.
I wanted to respond. Yes, you may, ma'am.
Yes, I think there may be a time delay. What I wanted to say, yes, I would think it's unreasonable, and that is why one would go back to the... You can't hear me.
I can,
can hear you?
I don't know. Is it clear, Chairperson, on your side? Because Advocate Bofu says I'm faint.
Okay,
I can hear you. Proceed.
I think maybe it's on our side, yeah. Because the Chairperson says he can hear you.
Yes, I was saying, Advocate Bofu, yes, I would consider it as unreasonable. And that is why one would go back to the PP to explain. There are people who would not even answer at those times. So, and one would wanted to actually limit interfering with their own private time. But it's what then happens as we give feedback of what could not be achieved and the reasons, including those people who are ill. But if it's then followed with an allergy or it's not accepted as a reasonable explanation because deadlines were set, then that is where the challenge is.
Yeah, no, you've said all that. I'm not talking about Audi. I'm talking about demanding performance from somebody in the ICU. Not Audi. Yeah. But it's fine. If you don't understand, you don't. Yeah. Okay.
No, I do understand. That is why I would.
Okay. No, because I don't know how we got to Audi. Yeah. I'm just saying that you agree or you disagree that to demand from somebody who is sick, any form of performance is a horrible thing to do. Either you agree or you don't agree.
I agree, even for our people.
Thank you. Yes. And also, that's the point I'm making, that there must be a limit, yeah. So for performance, which we all want, there are certain things you cannot do. For example, you also cannot hold somebody hostage for 2 days just because you want performance. You wouldn't do that, correct?
I'm glad you agree with our position.
Thank you.
That was also unreasonable from the public protector side as well.
Absolutely.
To explain the performance. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you, ma'am. Okay, well, next, if you ever have another opportunity to give evidence under oath, please make sure that you don't do it on somebody else's statement, that you actually do your own statement, because it's unprofessional conduct. And you would know that as a lawyer, because when you swear, we assume that you have read the things yourself, not that they have been put by somebody else, because otherwise that somebody else is not here to be cross-examined, so it becomes unfair. But I'm sure it's a lesson learned, isn't it?
I disagreed with you, so let us then keep it there where we have disagreed.
So you think it's a good thing? You disagree that it's a bad thing to sign a statement with things that you have not read? Is that what you disagree with?
No, I have explained myself, Advocate Mpofu, on those issues, and I have no intention of reopening what we have dealt with.
Okay, fine. Well, it's up to you if you don't want to learn any lessons, ma'am. There's nothing I can do. But I thought, at least because you said you had legal training, that it might help you in the future if you ever consider practicing law. But that's fine. Thank you. Anything? Thank you, Chaperson. I think this was
thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Thank you very much. I'll just take a few minutes before I come back to you now.
Okay.
Before I address the witness, I'm just going to check in terms of 616 and 617. Advocate Mayosi, if there's anything you want.
I do have issues to cover, Chair. Can I proceed?
Yes.
Ms. Tajani, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Advocate Mayosi. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, I can hear you clearly. Thank you. I just want to clarify some things that arose during the course of your cross-examination. I want to start with the assertion that you allegedly altered paragraph 10 of charge 4. Do you remember Advocate Shabalala taking you through that?
Yes, I do.
I just want to have a look at that. Seppo, can you put up paragraph, can you put up the motion, please? Paragraph 10 of it. Yes, so do you see that, Ms. Tejan?
Yes, I do.
That is paragraph 10 of the motion, where it is said that the advocate Nkwebane is guilty of misconduct and that she intimidated, harassed, and victimized staff, alternatively had failed to protect them from intimidation, harassment, or victimization by the erstwhile CEO of the Office of the Public Protector, Mr. Busu Mahlangu, in particular staff members who are listed below there. Do you see that?
Yes,
can you put up paragraph 3 of Ms. Tajani's affidavit? So the says that in charge 4, with which this committee is concerned, it's alleged that Advocate Nkwebane is guilty of misconduct and that amongst other things she intimidated, harassed, and victimized staff. Alternatively, she failed to protect staff in the office of the PPSA from victimization, harassment by the erstwhile CEO. Do you see that, Ms. Tejan?
Yes, I do.
So your paragraph 3 is the same in material respects then to what is said in 10, except that it doesn't name the specific employees who are alleged to have been threatened and so on, correct?
Correct.
So you continue, well, you continue with paragraph four.
I'm sorry, Chair, I should have raised my hand.
Okay, just suppose Edward Mayosi, I recognize you.
Thank you. Apologies, Chair. No, I think Advocate Mayosi is now again misleading the committee. That's not true what she has just said. She says it only leaves out the names. Says the following staff members. She stopped at staff members. It says who have been threatened with or had disciplinary action taken against them unlawfully, and those are serious things, and on trumped up charges. So why is she now misleading the committee again?
Chair.
Okay, thank you, Advocate Mbofu. Advocate Mayosi.
Thank you. I'm not sure what Advocate Mbofu's reference is to misleading the committee again. But I did put to the witness that the paragraph 3 is the same in material respect. That is what I said.
There was an issue about the names. Go ahead.
Yes. My question to the witness was not that the paragraph 3 was identical.
Conclude that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You continue in paragraph 4. Have you got it up, Tsepo? It's further alleged in charge 4 of the motion that the PP has committed misconduct and or demonstrated incompetence in the performance of her duties by doing or failing to do the various things alleged and set out in paragraphs 1.1 to 1.4. Do you see that? Seppo, if you can put up the motion from paragraph 11, please. So paragraph 11 at the preamble says Advocate Mkhwebane has committed misconduct by and or demonstrated incompetence in the performance of her duties by failing intentionally or in a grossly negligent manner to manage the internal capacity and resources of management staff, investigators and outreach officers in the Office of the Public Protector effectively and efficiently, failing intentionally or in a grossly negligent manner to prevent fruitless and wasteful expenditure and or unauthorized public expenditure and legal costs, failing intentionally in a grossly negligent manner to conduct the investigation and or make her decisions in a manner that ensures the independent and impartial conduct of investigation. And at 11.4, by deliberately seeking to avoid making findings against or deliberately or directing remedial action in respect of certain public officials whilst deliberately seeking to reach conclusions of unlawful conduct and impose far-reaching disciplinary measures and remedial action in respect of other officials, in brackets, even where such conclusions and or measures and or remedial action manifestly had no basis in law or in fact. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
So if you can go back to Mr. Dana's affidavit. But the real purpose of your affidavit and how you say you can assist this committee appears in paragraph 5. Is that right?
That's correct.
Where you say that in your capacity, in your current position in the organization, you have witnessed instances where staff at the PPSA have felt intimidated and victimized as a result of the conduct of the PP. So you talk about what you say is your experience and what you have witnessed as the conduct of the PP. Is that right?
That's correct.
Not Mr. Mashango, but the PP, correct?
That's correct.
And then, of course, in paragraph 6, you state that you've been deposed to this affidavit at our request as the evidence leaders to assist this committee with information which this committee may consider to be relevant in discharging it in its functions, right?
That's correct.
So your evidence relates in the main to what you say was the manner in which staff, including you, were treated in the office of the PPSA rather than about specific individuals that are named in charge four itself. Is that right?
Indeed, that's correct.
And would you agree that in order to appreciate the full context of why you made this affidavit, paragraph 3 to 5 must all be read together, and that it's perhaps incorrect to isolate a single paragraph in that section of your affidavit? Would you agree with that?
Certainly correct. That was the intention.
I'd like to move on to the issue of the Audis that were issued to you.
Maybe just before you move, recognize, just pause, Advocate Mayosi. I recognize the hand of Advocate Mpofu.
Yeah, Chairperson, yeah, well, I won't make an objection because that's really a waste of my time. I just want to put the on the record that Ms. Mayosi is now testifying or giving legal argument. All the witnesses to say is yes, yes, yes. But that's fine. Let us continue.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Advocate Mayosi.
On the issue of the audits that were issued to you, Mr. Tani, it was said that you were issued with 3 Audis because of your failure to meet deadlines. But you clarified that during Mr. Mbofu's cross-examination of you when you said that you were in fact issued with 2 Audis. Is that right?
That is correct, Chair.
And Advocate Shabalala then referred you to paragraph 51 and 52 of your affidavit as the first Audi. Can you put it up, Sibyl? Page 4361. And it was said that this is the Audi. I think the assertion that Mr. Shabalala was putting to you that you received Audi because of your failure to meet deadlines. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
This is the Audi that was first issued by Mr. It was not the first Audi, but it was issued by Ms. Tandisi Banyoni when there was a failure by the EMs to meet the deadlines set for 30 September 2021. Is that correct? And I just want to clarify, because Mr. Shabalala didn't take you there, that your evidence was that there was a report that was done by the CEO in response to this, right? And I'm not going to take you to that because you've already led evidence to that in chief. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. There was a report by the CEO.
And that's the one you referred to in paragraph 55.
That's correct. If I may see paragraph 55 on the screen, but I do note the report, yes.
Where she set out the reasons for the non-achievement.
That's correct.
Right. The second Audi that you were referred to was the one in paragraph 77, which was, it appears to have been the first Audi that was actually issued in terms of chronology, and that's the one that was issued by Ms. Basani Baloyi as a result of the failure to meet deadlines first on the 31st of March, a month after you arrived, and then on the 31st of July. Is that right?
That's correct.
And Mr. Shabalala took you to your response to that Audi in the form of paragraphs 78.1 to 78.4. And just to close the loop in terms of that evidence, because it didn't take you there, your response is also included in paragraph 79, correct? Your response to that first Audi?
Yes, it's included.
Where you say you proposed solutions?
That's correct.
And the solutions that are stated in 79.1 to 79.3, correct?
That's correct.
And can I just ask, were these suggestions heeded? Sorry. Were these suggestions, your proposals, were they heeded?
No, because in terms of changing the times to something that is realistic, to a time frame that is realistic, that did not change. As you have noted, that there was a feather Audi, not that there was nothing in between, say that it was not in the form of an Audi, but those threats continued. Meetings did not change also. So training, there was training that was provided, but I did indicate when I was responding to Advocate Tshabalala that even during the training that was provided to investigators, some of them would be called back from the very same training to attend to matters to the extent that they then had to withdraw from the training, some of them. But then they had to take calls, so I have already indicated to the committee. So the issue of training, yes, that was attended to, but it also had those challenges.
Thank you. So Mr. Tshabalala also then took you to paragraph 83, which is the one that talks about Mr. Mohalaba. And you already clarified with the Advocate Mbofu that Mr. Mohalaba did not in fact issue with an Audi, right?
Yes, he didn't.
And he didn't discipline you?
No, he didn't.
And you said that he was nevertheless instructed by the PP to discipline you, right?
That's correct. That is what he said to me. Based on this.
Are you able to explain why he did not obey the instruction?
Well, one thing that you said is that because I have changed from one unit to the other, and the view of the PP at the time was that the person that I took over from should have told me what the deadline was. But I did say to PP that deadline, I could not have met it. So he then said, look, he appreciated the circumstances. And he said, really, you would not take any action against me, because I actually said, no, look, go ahead, because I knew he was going to get into trouble. Go ahead, I will then answer at that point. But he said, look, I understand exactly what happened, and that you cannot meet a deadline that was set for somebody else, and now that you must then meet, which was actually, by that time, it was actually passed, and I could not meet it.
So you also testified that you were assisted by the evidence leaders in terms of drafting your affidavits. Do you recall that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So consultations, you will recall, took place between you and the evidence leaders, and these were both virtual and physical, right?
That's correct.
Do you recall your first consultation with Advocate Bauer in July at the PPSA, where she showed you the motion and also talked to you about what was contained in charge 4 of the motion?
Yes.
So in consultation with you and the evidence leaders, the evidence leaders asked you if you had personal information of intimidation, harassment, and victimization, either by the PP or Mr. Mahlangu, correct?
Correct.
And during those consultations, you presented to us that information that was within your knowledge or experience relating to the victimization and intimidation. Is that right?
That's correct.
Can you confirm that various drafts of your affidavit were then exchanged with you?
That's correct.
And you made comments and you made changes until the final draft of your affidavit, correct?
Yes, I did.
You also said during your cross-examination by Advocate Mbofu that you followed Ms. Mukhaladi's evidence, and that is how you know what she said. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember.
So, but do you recall that I also emailed you, Ms. Mukhaladi's affidavit for your consideration before you finalized your affidavit on the 5th of September, 2022. Do you recall that?
No, I didn't recall it for this meeting, but I do recall that we went through what was there. That is why I say I have responded to those areas that are relevant to me. And I've also said I followed the proceedings. So when we talk to those issues, I actually can, I've deposed in my affidavit to those issues.
You now say you didn't read it, but I do want to clarify whether you have personal experience of the matters in Ms. Mukhaladi's affidavit that you said you didn't read. So I'm going to go through that and establish and clarify whether you nevertheless do have personal experience of these matters, even though you now say you didn't read that affidavit. So is it still your evidence based on your own personal experience that dashboard meetings were intense and that they became more time consuming? Is that still your evidence? And is it based on your personal experience? That's really the question.
Yes, it is.
And what is said in what you confirmed in what you tried to confirm in Ms. Mukhaladi's affidavit to the effect that instead of reporting on the status of each case, the meetings became operational and were subsequently required to prepare memoranda on each matter and present at dashboard meetings. Is that based on your personal experience?
Yes, that's where I related my own first-hand experience on those, including dashboard.
And
just a pause, Advocate Mayosi. Advocate Mbofu, I see your hand.
No, thank you, Chair. I was muted, yeah. Just wanted to put on the record that all this evidence is coming once again from the mouth of Ms. Advocate Mayosi, where the witness has said that if she said yes, she had not read the thing, she had not read it. It can be changed.
Yes. You will have I got muted myself.
So I just wanted to say that, ordinarily you should not allow this what's happening now, because it's not worth anything. It's just worthless. Thank you.
Thank you. Advocate Mbofu. Advocate Mayosi.
Chair, the purpose of these witnesses is to place information before this committee, and it is for this committee to make of that information what they will. What I am doing here is that you will have noted that I don't dispute the witness's evidence that she now says she didn't read the affidavit, but I do think it nevertheless needs to be clarified whether she has personal experience of these things, and that is what I'm seeking to do. If she doesn't, she will say no.
Okay.
And do you have personal experience of memoranda that had to go through quality checks, quality assurance approval processes, and how this contributed to the intensity of dashboard meetings? Do you have personal experience of that or not?
Yes, I do. And what I have stated in the affidavit, it's what is my personal experience.
And do you have personal experience of the PP at dashboard meetings being interested only in what product and by when?
Certainly. That was the decision that was always taken.
So coming back then to how your affidavit eventually came about, it is so that you were eventually satisfied with the contents of that affidavit and that it contains matters that were within your knowledge and personal experience, correct?
That is correct.
So, lastly, Ms. K, Tejani, you first gave evidence here on the 10th of September 2022. Do you recall that? On a Saturday.
Yes,
remember? Yeah. Do you recall that on the 8th of September 2022, almost 9 weeks ago, I provided you with a copy of the motion in one email? Do you recall that?
I do not really recall. I got the directives, but do not the motion.
Yes, so thereafter in another email, you do recall that I provided you with a copy of the directives on the same day, right?
Yes.
I have no further questions, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Advocate Mayosi. Ms. Tejani, if I may get your attention, please. We're reaching the end of your journey with us from as long as the 10th of September. And so I do want, on behalf of the committee, to express our appreciation and thank you for availing yourself before the 10th of September, on the 10th, on the 13th, and the other occasions when we could not attend to your cross-examination. And I sincerely apologize on behalf of the committee that would have dragged you along for such a long time, and that it's been such a long time that it's even possible that certain moments would be forgotten and so on. So we want to thank you for that. But maybe before I officially excuse you, just want to hear if there's anything you want to say to the committee.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you also for the opportunity of listening to me amongst other colleagues. And I hope that I have assisted the committee in at least the charge that I was requested to assist with. I must also say to the committee, it's been a very, very difficult process, not for me, but for the office as well, to sit on this side and actually be seen as an adversary to the PP. It's not coming out from a position of hate, and I'm not really pleading my position with her. I'm just saying it is a very tough period for the whole institution and for me, for such a process to be exposed not only nationally but even internationally on what we are going through as an office. I do hope that we all learn from this process, that we learn also as executives to be more vocal. One learned person called it courage deficit from our side that has placed us where we are today. But without taking any further time of the committee, I do want to appreciate this moment, and I do hope that we are going to see certain changes in terms of the management and leadership of this institution, which has really not been good to us. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And also to the honorable member.
Thank you, Ms. Tejani, for your contribution. We do hope that it will assist us either way in our work as we deliberate and formulate whatever report we have to. Thank you. And you are now officially excused. I don't hear you. You are excused, but you are just
sorry, muted. Sorry, I muted myself.
You want to come back.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honorable members. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zane. We appreciate it. you are excused. You can remove yourself from the platform now, officially. And that being said and done, I now go back to Advocate Mbofu and allow him the time to place matters on record as requested. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, yes, I've already outlined the issues I wanted to deal with, so I won't do that again. I'll start with the events of the 27th October 2022, that fateful day of the birthday of Oliver Reginald Tambo, which you pointed out, Chair, who was incidentally a lawyer. There have been a lot of misrepresentation, and some of it we've dealt with in the letter we wrote to you, Chair, which we asked you to kindly table in front of the committee. So I want to rehash that ground. But I just wanted to clarify a few things, because certain things have been said in our absence, and I suspect deliberately because we were not there to answer for ourselves, which need to be put into perspective. The first one, Chair, is the fact that the terminology changed with time. On Thursday, the 27th, we were accused of a withdrawal. And then the following day, out of what was said by, I think, Honorable Maneli or Honorable Ngosi, I'm not able to differentiate between their viewpoint. Then the terminology changed to that word staged a walkout. Well, both of those are false and not in accordance with what happened. The members, or at least the chair for starters, I don't know if the members had access to all our correspondence, but the chair, we informed the chairperson as long ago as the 18th of October. And please, I hope we'll correct the record, because we've all been referring to that date as the 21st of October. That was a different letter. It was actually even 3 days before that. The 18th of October, we wrote a letter to you, Chairperson, in which we said, among other things, at paragraph 5, that even then, meaning when we attend the committee, it is our intention to attend for the purpose of making an application for the adjournment of the inquiry pending the envisaged court challenge. And says, depending on the outcome of that application, notice of which is hereby duly given, we would be available to make realistic and practical arrangements for the way forward at that stage. That's what we informed the chairperson. And as I say, I'm sure at least the chairperson read it. I don't know about the others. Then chairperson, on the 24th, that is 4 days after that, again, on the assumption that these things get read out, or the reason why you wanted us to give it on the 24th, because it was by your directive, was presumably that someone was going to read it before we come on the 27th. And this is what it said at paragraph 9 of the document we gave you on the 24th. It is important to state it clearly and upfront that in bringing this application before the committee as presently composed, in other words, with you and Mr. Myla, the public protector does not thereby abandon or in any way waive her right to forcefully argue that the committee is not entitled to sit at all once it has been made aware of her intention to challenge its composition and jurisdiction in the envisaged judicial review proceedings. So, on the contrary, the public protector will participate in the sitting schedule for 27 October 2022, purely for the purpose of moving this application and in an endeavor to give the committee an opportunity to do the right thing by suspending the proceedings and to comply with the duty to exhaust internal remedies. We wrote that to you on the 24th, 3 days before the day, purely for the purposes of moving the application, right? And then at paragraph 11, we said, her participation is therefore not acquiescence in the legal capacity of the committee to proceed with any other business, which capacity is hereby specifically disputed. Now, again, anybody who had read the letter of the 18th and this, before we even set foot in your chamber there, would have understood, or at least would have asked us what we meant by it. But if, as if that was not enough, on the 27th, I personally read out these things and explained them again in the morning, that we are there purely for the purposes of moving the application and gave the necessary qualifiers. But clearly all that also was either not heard or seen or read. And then again, in the evening of that day, I explained myself before the end of the proceedings. So, sorry, the confusion that was then declared on the following week really should not have happened. Then, Chairperson, after the explanation we gave on the 27th, we went, or rather the public protector herself then came and gave the same explanation, I think, on the following day, which was the 28th. And that is when the new theory of the so-called walkout started, which was then, after that, it spread like a wildfire, because then it was embraced by the chairperson, by the parliamentary advisors, by the evidence leaders, and by everyone. The new buzzword now on the 28th was the walkout. Well, we've explained that as well, that we did not stage any walkout. And I can assure you, chairperson, the day I want to stage a walkout, you won't be confused. I will tell you that I'm staging a walkout. I'm not scared of saying that if it ever happens. So, or of anybody. So the if we ever, I ever stage a workout, it will be no secret. Any form of protest I've ever done in my life, including hunger strikes, it was what it was, not something that looks like it. Okay? So what we did on the 27th, I mean, if you want to be literal about it, is did we walk? Yes, we walked. Did we go out? Yes, we went out. Yeah. But did we stage a walkout? No, we did not. Otherwise, every time you walk out of that chamber, chairperson, you are staging a walkout. The two things are totally different. Yes. Yeah. So if you take it literally that you just using your feet and getting out of the room means a walkout, then you are right. But that's not what happened. We left and we were out, so to speak, just as you do every time there's a tea break there. Yeah. But we were not staging a walkout. As I say, the day that happens, you will know. Yeah. So in case you don't understand how we work as lawyers, which is what we explained, is that we have we are creatures of instructions. So we work according to a mandate. So unless if you want to leave the brief, you do what you are told. Okay? And that's the nature of our profession. So whatever we do, particularly when it has been explained ad nauseam, about where our instructions ended for the day and where they started, then it should either be understood in that context. So none of the epithets that were used there are true. except, as I say, if you want to be literal or look at it from the point of view of physical movement. So there was no withdrawal and there was no walkout. Now, what then followed that, Chairperson, is the second issue that I want to deal with, which is the denial of legal representation for the public protector. Before we were able to get any new instructions, the public protector came as a courtesy at your invitation, Chairperson, to explain some of the things that I've explained now. Yes, it was at your invitation. Don't shake your head, Chairperson. It was at least reported to us that at the end of the session on the 27th, you had indicated that the public protector should write something to Thembi Nkosi. A few hours later, she wrote to Thembi Nkosi, and one of the things she asked was whether you expected her to come the following day. And Thembi Nkosi wrote back to say, yes, you did. So I don't know what the problem is. That's exactly what happened. There's documentary proof of it. Then the public protector came to explain some of the things that I have explained, Chairperson, including the fact that our purpose for being there on the day was specifically for the application, which we had explained to you. Now, that meant that when you ask her to come back on the 1st, which was not a scheduled date for a sitting, again, she explained to you, and I don't want to read the document to save time, she explained to you for the second time what had happened, and Mr. Sianeho was also in attendance. Now, on the 1st and 2nd of November, Chairperson, what happened in that committee is one of the most serious violations of the rights of the public protector. Because against her will, she was kept there without her legal representatives of her choice, and against the injunction of the Constitutional Court that she must be afforded legal representation by practitioners of her choice. And what is even worse, apart from the fact that her legal representatives were not there, which was explained to you, Chairperson, and which you tacitly accepted the explanation, because that's why we're here today, and you've allowed us to do the cross-examination today, which should have been done on that day, which means that you accepted the explanation that was given to you. But be that as it may, you insisted on conducting the proceedings in the absence of the public protector's representatives of her choice, and despite her protestations. And you went further by not even allowing her to leave, even if she was going to leave and watch it on YouTube or join on the Zoom. She had to sit there as a hostage, as she said, your hostage. Now, that Chairperson was not just a violation of the public protector's rights to legal representation. And I must, for my sake now, explain to you that indeed, due to unforeseen circumstances, we were not able last week because of the deadlines that were explained to be there. And that, but as I say, you seem to have accepted that somehow. But, although in the same breath, you also wanted the proceedings to continue. Now, Chair, we're registering this complaint for the record for that purpose, to say that the irregularity that occurred on the 1st and 2nd of November is something that must be registered. It will probably be dealt with at some other stage in other forums, but we must never be understood to not to have placed it on the record as soon as it has happened. You went even further, Chairperson, and you were thankfully stopped by, I think it was Honorable Malema and other members, of interrogating even the attorney and opening an inquisition of the attorney, which is not allowed, because the client, who is the public protector, had expressly addressed you, and in that way exercised her privilege. There is something called attorney and client privilege, or the professional legal privilege, where you cannot go beyond and want to interrogate discussions that may or may not have taken place between the attorney and the client. And it's a rule that the chair might not have been aware of, but it is one that is recognized in South Africa, alongside the right to legal representation and the right to access the courts, as enshrined in Section 34 of our Constitution. And what happened in that 2 days, Chairperson, is proof of why legal representation is important, because some of the abuses that followed in the short space of 2 days showed the reason why the Constitutional Court, in its wisdom, saw that this process cannot be trusted to continue without legal representation. Now, so I'll come back to the issue of the privilege. But the Constitutional Court, Chairperson, we know that you don't want us to be here, or you don't want the lawyers to be here. You've never wanted the lawyers to be here. And I'm not talking about you personally. I'm saying you and the other 399 members, or the majority of them. You went to court, to the highest court in the land, to prevent legal representation in this process. And I've said this before, that even the DA abandoned the refusal of legal representation when it came to the Constitutional Court. It was only the Parliament that insisted on that. And the Constitutional Court, thank God, you lost that case, and that's why we're here. And the point I'm making, Chairperson, is that the feeling is mutual. We also don't want to be here, just as much as you don't want us to be here. But we all have to perform our duties. We don't particularly want to be here with you as well. But here we are, the court has spoken. So we need to find a way of making it work, even if we don't want each other to be in each other's company, for the sake of justice and our constitution. So we understand that. We understand that we're in an environment of people who did not want us to be there. Now, Chair, I just want to demonstrate, if for us not being there for 2 days, the things that happened, imagine what would have happened for this process if the public protector was not represented at all. Because some of the things that happened represented the law of the jungle, and including what I've spoken about, the hostage situation and other kangaroo type activity. So if there was no legal representation, we would have experienced even more than what we experienced, like the interrogation of legal representatives in contravention of the Constitution, not to mention the abuse of black advocates by information that was put up, and attorneys, information that was put up out of malice and spite, which was irrelevant to the matter, and which, had legal representation been there, would not have been allowed, or at least would have been objected to. But all that happened under your watch, Chairperson, no problem. It was all allowed to take place, and abuse not only of us, but of other black practitioners who, unlike us, at least we have a chance to address you now, but the other people whose earnings were put there incorrectly with the wrong figures, in fact, did not have any recourse, neither did they have any prior warning. And just the rules of common decency, let alone professional ethics, would have demanded that if such an abuse was going to be done on legal practitioners, then at least they should have been told. But that did not happen. So I'm saying, if things like that, which have now caused national consternation and concern and ruins people's careers and maybe even lives, because some of the people whose names were bandied about there might face criminals because they are supposed to be having that money probably in their mattress or in their couches if they follow the example of the leadership. So those kind of abuses were done in your process, literally, because for that day or two, you allowed a situation where there was no legal representation. Those things should not have happened. In fact, the entire sitting should not have happened. But I'm just demonstrating to you the importance of, you might hate it yourself, but the importance of having legal representatives, or rather the dangers of continuing as you did without such representation. Now, Chair, I just want to read this to you, that the behavior was actually reminiscent of the worst forms of oppression. To intrude into the space between the lawyers and their client is something that was done by the apartheid regime at its highest, at the most exploitative stages. In a case called Mandela versus Minister of Prisons, the Minister of Prisons allowed the prison authorities to keep privileged information between attorney and client for so-called safekeeping, and the court allowed it. But even our courts have since departed from that. And one of our judges said that interference with the right to professional privilege between attorney and client is a violation of the right to effective legal representation and the constitutionally enshrined right to counsel. And it said a serious assault upon that right constitutes an irregularity so grave as to lead per se to the conclusion that a fair trial would no longer be possible. And that is in South Africa. And the following was said as well in the leading authority or writing on this question by Zeffert, Professor Zeffert. He likened the relationship between the attorney and the client to a close friendship, but it was just to make the point. And he says, since in relation, in a response to human need, it creates a dependence, which it would be a betrayal to compromise. To allow social expediency to limit and compromise what, by hypothesis, is an entailment of the original grant of the right to the individual, in his view, to take away with the left hand what has been given with the right. If I have a client with legal needs, then neither another person with the greater needs nor a court should be able to compel or morally oblige me to compromise my care for those needs. And he said, it is true in relation between personal friends and in relation to between a lawyer and his client differ superficially. The latter is not reciprocal, nor does it depend on mutual devotion and would seem to be motivated by money. But these differences are not fundamental. In the relationship between lawyer and client, the law has created an institution which, in Freud's view, exemplifies at least in a unilateral sense the ideal personal relations of trust and personal care. The fact that the relation is cemented by pay does not derogate from this. Once the relation has been formed, it is the client's needs and not economics that determine its content. Now, what that means in simple English is that the very idea of wanting to intrude and go beyond the giving of instructions and so on offends our constitution. And it was described as follows in relation to the constitution. The right is of crucial constitutional importance, and the obligation to provide effective legal representation is one of the most important constitutional obligations imposed on the state by the constitution. Two, it is the closest of all the rights in the Bill of Rights to being absolute, the right to legal representation. Three, it is a right of substance, not form. Four, it is part of the right to a fair trial. Five, it is the right to be properly informed of the right is corollary thereto. Six, a breach of the right is a serious irregularity, although the failure to inform the accuser adequately of the right in criminal matter is not necessarily fatal to the fairness of the trial to the extent that the trial is vitiated. The right to legal representation means the right to proper and effective legal representation. Proper and effective legal representation. And the Constitutional Court in this case went further by saying full legal representation by practitioners of her choice. And that is the right that you violated serially from the morning of the 1st of November up to the evening of the 2nd of November, Chairperson. Then, Chairperson, when it comes to this issue of Before I forget this point here, you had what was posed as legal advice, or I don't know what to call it, but based on a so-called withdrawal, all sorts of things were said there and about all the trick in the book and what have you. But all that was based on the wrong assumption that there was a withdrawal. So it's just a waste of time to talk about, it's like talking about, someone talking about studying for the, for something that's irrelevant, like as somebody said, coastal affairs in a place like Lesotho that is landlocked. So to have a discussion, however long it is, about a withdrawal which is not there, is just nothing else but a waste of breath. And although I know, I noticed that there was congratulations and clapping of hands about an issue that is completely irrelevant and actually has not happened. It's interesting at an academic level, but not related to anything that happened in this committee. So those are the issues, Chair, the first two issues. I've combined them, the issue of what happened on the 27th of October and the second issue, which was the denial of the legal representation of the public protector. The third issue, I'll also, for the sake of time, I'll merge it with the last issue. It was the issue of the way forward. Chair, you've received a letter from us which protests seriously by in respect of the way in which we have been treated in this committee, again, in a way that denies the public protector effective legal representation by unilaterally imposing upon us times, some of them which are not scheduled and which have not been discussed with us. The program which you released gives the public protector 10 days to do everything that she's supposed to do in relation to her own impeachment. This is against the background of the evidence that has been led here since July up to now, and I accept that there have been breaks in between, some of which were necessary, some of which were not necessary. In fact, there should be no inquiry at all at this stage. But be that as it may, we accept that the 4 months or so that has passed, this does not mean that we were sitting every day. I think on our count, we would have sat for something like 35 days by tomorrow or whenever we finish on Friday. But be that as it may, Chair, to give the public protector 10 days to respond to all that, to 16 witnesses and almost 40 days of sittings, is just plainly, absurd. And we know that the witnesses, like the one who has just finished now, who's taken, maybe she took 2 days in effect, those witnesses come for specific topics and deal with specific things. The public protector will be dealing, I'm just talking about herself now, will be dealing with all the evidence from those witnesses and more. So I don't know what you expect, that she's going to come there for half an hour and just say what? No, I disagree with the witnesses. Well, the public protector herself will probably take that period that you have given us or thereabouts, just giving the evidence to deal with the multitudes of evidence that have been given against her, and to give context to some of the issues, not to mention all the reports that have been mentioned, all the court proceedings, all the incidents of the HR issues that have been led here, and so on. The issues of backlog, all the issues that have been dealt with by the witnesses that are contained in the Mazoni motion. So on anybody who would have thought that to deal with all that will take 10 days must be living in a completely different world. So that is the kind of thing that we have come to expect. In fact, at some stage, the program did not even have anything, any input by the public protector. So I suppose we should be grateful for even the 10 days. So that's the situation, Chair. And then last time when we said you gave us one day to prepare, you said no, you did not do that, and that it would have been unreasonable to do so. But you've gone to do the exact same thing now. Because to your knowledge, we are facing a mammoth court hearing on the 24th of November. In fact, Chair, for your information, yesterday we received the following directive from the Constitutional Court. It says the hearing of the consolidated application set down for hearing on Thursday, 24th November 2022, shall commence at 9 o'clock. In other words, not at the normal time when that court commences. And that's because of the unprecedented volume, certainly unusual volume of cases. It's about 6 or 7 cases condensed into one day. And even now, we're in the process of filing heads of argument in respect of that matter. And it's a matter that concerns this committee, and it's going to detain us until the 24th, at least. So we only have the 25th of November to do all the things that we're supposed to do, and then we must be back with you on the 28th. So we're back to the same situation in September where you gave us one day to prepare, as against all the other. And these are things, Chair, to be fair, which if you had simply just spoken to us, could have been clarified. But because all these programs and deadlines and what have you are unilaterally imposed from high and above, you know, and we must just, I don't know what, just accept without even being asked to comment or even to check whether we're available. You want us to sit in December. People have made plans, family plans. We've had to negotiate with some of the team members. But nobody bothers to even say, look, we know the program was going to end at the end of November. Now we're thinking of doing 1 week in December. Will you be available? No. No such luck for us. It's just, you know, the chairperson has spoken, the mighty chairperson. And we must simply comply or be accused of walking out, or if we are not available, then I suppose it will proceed with or without us. That is the attitude, as what happened last week. Well, Chairperson, that is a gross irregularity, and it is not to be expected to proceedings other than kangaroo courts. And it is not fair to expect when you are in the jungle that you must follow the law of the sea, which is what happens. We are expected to play by the rules, but the rules are not applied to us. But we have said in our letter that we are prepared to compromise on the December issue. We've spoken to some of the members of the team and up to a particular date, which is indicated in the letter to you, which we hope you will table to the committee, and which was discussed with the evidence leaders yesterday. But certainly the time that you have given is, to call it inadequate would be an insult to the word inadequate. Now, so hopefully, Chair, one day you will call us and discuss with us before to impose such issues on ourselves and our families. Then, Chairperson, if I may deal with the last issue, which is the update on the litigation matters, with specific reference to the review application. I've already mentioned the case on the 24th, and by the way, I'm told now by my attorneys that you, Chairperson, have just filed papers and the speaker in that matter today, in the Constitutional Court matter. But I hope you are not like Ms. Tejane. You know that you filed an affidavit there. But anyway, for the record, you have filed papers, and so has the speaker intervening in that matter. So that matter has actually become even more complex now than it was when I started addressing you, because that means next week we're going to have to respond to the papers that you filed today. I don't even know what they are. I've just been told that they've been filed. And that then emphasizes the point I was making, Chairperson, that we will be detained with that matter up until the 24th. As I say, the information I'm giving you now, I did not even have it when I started addressing you. So it compounds the matter even further. And it then exacerbates the unfairness of your unilaterally imposed date of 28 November. And that's why, you know, one of the members was saying it's a long time, because if you don't look at these things in their proper context, or you're just sitting and looking at it, it might look like a long time, but in reality, it's one day. But anyway, that is the Constitutional Court matter. And by the way, that matter has a bearing on whether this committee even is sitting lawfully in the first place. And I suppose that's why the chairperson has put in papers, unless if you think we're putting the papers just for I don't know, for whatever reason. But you may or may not know, it looks like you don't know, that it has a bearing on these proceedings, a serious bearing. The second matter, Chairperson, is the more pertinent matter, which is the issue of the review application. By now, you would have received the review application. It was served on you yesterday or the day before. Day before, yes, on the 7th, on Monday. Served on you and the other parties, and it was filed in court yesterday. I have the case number somewhere, but it's not important for now. But once it's allocated a number, automatically that means that it has been entered into the court system. And if you allow me, Chair, that's the matter that I really would like to address the members on, because that also has serious implications or more direct implications on this committee. The one of the 24th has implications on the committee, but maybe more serious implications on the president, because it also deals with his unlawful and retaliatory suspension of the public protector as found by the Western Cape High Court, which found that the suspension was motivated by him trying to escape the pala-pala consequences of the 31 questions. That's one of the matters that will be debated on the 24th. But the one of the review is focused purely on you, Chairperson, as a person, as a chair, Mr. Mileham. Those are actually the respondents. The other people are cited just as interested parties. I'm also told that Mr. Mileham has just filed a notice to oppose. And as expected, the DA has also filed a notice, even though it was cited like all the other political parties, just for whatever interest. And I'm sure one doesn't have to be a genius to think that the chairperson is also going to file a notice soon, if he has not done so. That matter is set down on the urgent roll for the 13th and 14th of December. Again, those dates were carefully identified for two reasons. One, it was to try and avoid having to do that while when the committee is running, so that no more time would be wasted. And so those of us who have been able to have to change the December plans, unlike others in our teams, have will have to be sitting here. Which one is this? Awful, Milam. Yes, okay, yes, yes. I've already mentioned that. That's the one we received today. I'm sorry, Chairperson. So that's the first reason why it's been put in that awkward period. And hopefully the charge president will be able to accommodate us. But we'll also be discussing with your advocate, Chairperson, as to how it should be proceeded. There is a chance that the dates might hopefully be either brought forward or whatever is arranged. But the purpose of that application is merely to review judicially your decision and that decision of Mr. Milham and the decision of this committee to agree with both of you in your non-recusal decisions. And I don't need to repeat what I said last week about that, but you know that if that is found to be the case, then the consequences are more than dire for the rest of these proceedings, or actually for any proceedings. It might be that even sitting here we're just wasting time and money for nothing, as we warned last week. And on that note, Chair, I just want to say that we are specifically aggrieved. I'm not going to deal with the issue of the malicious use of our names and portraying us as thieves and criminals and looters of taxpayers' money and all that. Some of us are used to that, but others are not. And it's unfair to impose it on those who are not used to it. Some of us have lived to expect that, and it really doesn't even make any difference. But to do that on innocent junior advocates who are trying to make a living and to make a career, and to do that to the public protector so that any other lawyer who might want to associate with her must know that they are going to be bandied about as looters of state coffers is very, very unfortunate. And the chairperson and the members who did not protest, at least thank God some of the members protested last week at some of these things, allowed it to happen in this house, hallowed house or revolutionary house, is something that I'm sure will be written about in years to come. It is the same as those members. There were members from two political parties who actually continued with the questioning of Mr. Jane when the public protector was in hospital or being treated. And some of those things that happen in this parliament make one shudder to think what could have happened if the, or rather that those things are happening under the name of a constitutional democracy. But they have happened, and they continue to happen. So the potential waste of money and time will then be determined by the court, which will either agree or disagree that some of the grounds of recusal are valid, such as the spousal relationship between advocate Mr. Milham and Ms. Mazzoni, who is the author of the Mazzoni motion. If any one of those grounds is found to be sustainable, then everything we have done here since the beginning up to now will have just been a waste of time. As I say, as we have been warning and trying to plead for a reason. But the rulings were made. We'll have to see what the court have to say about that. So, Chair, yes, I was talking about the abuse. This is the last point. I was talking about the abuse of advocates and attorneys throughout the country. Well, particularly targeted at those who are involved in this matter now for obvious reasons, but other people who might be completely unaffected by what is happening here and who are just, as I say, innocent South Africans trying to contribute to the cause of justice. And you have put their lives and the lives of their children in danger by allowing the abuses that happened, which only happened for the, as I say, because of it was on top of the other abuse that you were committing, which was to run and I don't know, I see you are smiling or laughing, Chairperson, but it's a serious matter.
I want you to proceed and conclude. I want you to proceed and conclude and just continue looking at.
Yeah, I'm continuing.
Stop. I'm talking, Advocate Mpofu.
I'm talking too. It's not a smiling.
Okay, I'm on the platform now. I want you to proceed and conclude, please.
Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, I just wanted to say it's not a laughing matter or a smiling matter. If it was your children who were threatened or were getting all the negative publicity, which was
Are you done, Advocate Mpofu?
No, I'm not done.
Please complete, therefore. Conclude.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, the impact of what happened under your watch is that those people have been seriously violated in the most egregious manner that you can imagine. And it will, if anything happens to them, it will be placed at your door. Because it was known, even when the information was solicited, we know how it happened. It's a whole scheme of, it started the day Mr. Milham said he wanted to know the names of the lawyers who benefited. And I think that Honorable Heron corrected him to say, mustn't use the word benefited, because those people worked for whatever money was paid to them. And that was the chain of events that has led to this national crisis that has been created of abuse. It was all well orchestrated from that date. So what we are saying, Chairperson, is that but allowing that situation to obtain, and even now, not even find, I can see you don't find it particularly troubling, that is something that we will deal with when we deal with the witness, Mr. Van der Merwe, in more detail. All I'm doing at this stage is simply to link that to the abuse of not allowing legal representation. And I'm saying, Chair, that it's irreversible, quite frankly. The damage that has been done. Some of those people have had lawyers calling them and not wanting to do work with them, because who would want to do work with someone who's associated with looting the coffers of the state? And all that was done without any context. So Advocate A maybe earned 2 million rand, we don't know, over 5 years or how many matters they did. It might have been 100 matters, but no, we simply are given a globular figure, and there's a specific focus only on black people, as usual, the perpetual victims of racism and violation in this country, even in this parliament. For no relevant reason to this committee at all, except just to cause hurt and to violate people's rights in your name, Chairperson. And so maybe you'll be proud of having been presided over such a violation, but that's a question for another day. So I'm speaking for those victims now of black professionals who, unlike me, are not used to being abused by the racists and their black apologists. So that is something that is unacceptable, and it's something that is not going to end here. And if I say that, you are going to say I'm threatening you. But it is what it is. It's not going to end here. There are people who are going to take it up in various legal fora, particularly those who are not involved in this matter. As I say, at least I would have had a chance in my team to address you now, and we will also address it through Mr. van der Merwe. But I'm made to understand that other people are going to take it up either with the parliament or with other structures. And that's not a threat, Chairperson. Last time when I said we were going to do a recusal application, you went on television. So you must, at least I'm just telling you what was said by other people out there. So there, Chairperson, I'm concluded on that sad note. And I say that if this parliament is going to violate us, who will protect us? But we're here, we'll continue to do our professional duties and our duties to the public protector as our client. And we will do so with everything we have in our power, every ounce of blood, fearlessly, even in the face of racist abuse by racists and their fellow travelers or security guards of racism. Thank you.
I'm going to ask Thembinkosi Ngoma quickly to, as you would have sent to members, as we always do, correspondence, to quickly take them through that. And thereafter, if members have got any comment, we'll make that, and I'll make a ruling thereafter. I'm going to allow you tomorrow, Advocate Bauer. Your matter is related to tomorrow's session about the whatever you wanted to place on record. So we'll not allow you to do that today. So I'll quickly ask Mr. Ngoma to place this correspondence. And if there is any comment from members, I'll allow them and I'll make a summary and a ruling.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, members. Good afternoon to the PPA, the legal team, and everyone else that is watching and following this meeting. Chairperson, yes, we had two correspondence from the last meeting of the committee. The first one, Chairperson, is the letter dated 4th of November, which was from the committee to Sianoha Attorneys. And that letter, Chairperson, sought to explain the reasons why the committee took a decision to proceed with its proceedings and also the way forward, which is also why we are sitting here today, Chairperson, and members. This letter was shared with the members of the committee. And then, Chairperson, the second letter I received yesterday from Sianoha Attorneys. It was a response to the committee letter of the 4th of November. Advocate Mbofu, who has spoken extensively on the contents of the letter when he was addressing this committee now, Chairperson. That letter was shared with the members as well last night, which is why I'm not going through the contents of the letter. Members have both letters. That's the only correspondence, Chairperson, that I have received from the 4th until yesterday. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Committee Secretary, Mr. Ngoma. Any member who wants a clarity, a question, or want to make a brief comment, I will allow that now. As I said, if any. Thank you. Honorable Nkosi.
Thank you, sir. I just want clarity to check with you. What are we commenting on what Advocate Mbofu has said, or are we commenting on the process today?
I'm just saying, if you have got any questions or clarity you want to seek on what has been put on record, you can do that. If none, we're proceeding, because I want to make a ruling or summary of the meeting.
Oh, okay, Chair. My points are two. One is that you made a ruling on proceeding with this process, and this committee agreed with that ruling, and we still stand by that ruling. There's nothing that has changed since then. Secondly, that I do confirm that I did say the actions on that day were planned and staged. If I recall well, I said it was a planned and staged walkout, and I stand by those words. There's nothing that has been said that demonstrates otherwise. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Ngosi. Honorable Sukas.
Yes, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think it should be noted that a couple of questions was asked of the public protector on the day that a legal team walked out of the venue and walked out of the proceedings. Those questions have not been answered. And what is being presented to us now here by Mr. Mpofu seems to be a rewriting of history, because when we started, Mr. Mpofu indicated or hinted, and I even asked the question, if Mr. Mpofu is hinting that the public protector is going to withdraw from the process, and Mr. Mpofu then denied it. But when he did get up and finally walked out, Mr. Mpofu said, "See you again or not," or something to that effect. I think Advocate Bauer still read it into the record. Everything that was said by Mr. Mpofu, I want to put it on record that I feel that Parliament is being disrespected. I feel Parliament is being disrespected and the processes of Parliament is being undermined. It is the public protector that is accountable to Parliament and not the other way around. It is also not the legal team of the public protector who sets the terms for this process. The public protector is accountable to this house and not the other way around.
Then in terms of Ms. Mpofu saying that they were, we're glad to hear that, as the chairperson has indicated, that all the proceedings are on YouTube, certainly for those 2 days. And Mr. Mpofu clearly now has made it clear that he certainly listened in to the proceedings. The legal team of the public protector, it should also be stated and noted, has let the public protector down. They have left her without legal representation for those 2 days. It is not Parliament that has withdrawn the legal representation. It's not Parliament that has refused for the legal team to be here. It was the legal team that has walked out, and Parliament has asked the questions, under what circumstances did they leave? I think, Chair, that covers all of it. And I think lastly, I think the public protector owed it to us, certainly, as part of a duty to give us the answers that we were looking for on that day. But they have clearly jeopardized the public protector. In fact, Mr. Mpofu has spoken very well about the risks that has been put with the advocates and the details, as he has said it today, that was made public. So has his client's reputation been hurt by what Mr. Mpofu has done in the public? And as Parliament, we cannot allow for this institution to be further undermined. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sukas. Honorable Zongola.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a clarity point to Advocate Mpofu. Clearly, there is a conflict. There's a clear conflict between the legal representatives of the public protector, the committee, and the chairperson of the committee regarding various issues of which now the courts have been approached. Now, the clarity I'm seeking here from Advocate Mpofu is, what are the implications of the committee proceeding with its program before the courts have made any determination on the conflict that is clearly going to cause, that is clearly causing a major rift and is threatening to make this inquiry, which is very important as it sets a precedent for any future inquiry in our country. So what are the implications? Would the proceedings be before the courts have made a determination and resolved the disputes? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Zongola. Honorable Mylan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me start by addressing the leaving of the chamber by Advocate Mpofu and the other members of the Public Protector's legal team on the 27th. First of all, Chair, we had not concluded our deliberations for the day. We had not adjourned. We had not suspended the hearing or anything like that for a tea break or a lunch break or anything like that. And Mr. Mpofu stood up and walked out, and his colleagues got up and followed him. Now, not only is that completely disrespectful to the committee, he wasn't excused. He hadn't been asked to leave or anything like that. He just got up and walked out. And so to describe it as a withdrawal or a walkout, I think is a perfectly reasonable way of describing what happened there. What followed was, frankly, confusion. We didn't know what was going on. All the members from various parties questioned, what's happening here? Why is this happening? And we were unclear as to exactly what the status was of Mr. Mpofu and the other members of the legal team. That clarity was not provided adequately when the public protector addressed us on the 28th, nor was it provided by Mr. Cianejo when he was addressed on the following Monday or Tuesday. I can't remember exactly which day it was. So I think that the issue that I have is that this was not something that the committee was prepared for. It was not something that we understood. And I think, frankly, we still don't understand the full reasons for what went on there. I'd like to now address what Mr. Mpofu spoke about with regard to the breach of attorney-client privilege. First of all, questions were asked of Advocate Mkhwebane, and she answered those questions, and the committee were not satisfied. And those questions related to, essentially, is Mr. Mpofu coming back? Or can we expect him to come back? That was the extent of those discussions. It had nothing to do with the merits of the hearing. It was limited to essentially where is your legal representation and what is going on here. So I think to say that we have breached attorney-client privilege is a stretch.
On a point of order, Chair.
Yes. Honorable Gores.
May I ask, sir, are we rehashing the issues that we discussed in the...
We're not.
Yeah, we're not,
Honorable Gores.
Otherwise, we should all start from that point.
Thank you, Honorable Gores.
I'll leave that point. I'll move on.
Thank you, Honorable Gores. We are not. Honorable Myelam, if you can just shoot straight forward with your whatever clarity
is. My last point is this. It relates to the notice that was provided to Mr. Mpofu and the other members of the Public Protector's team. In your correspondence of the 19th of October, in reply to his correspondence, you said, and I quote, and I'm going to read it to you, at paragraph 13.3, in the event that the committee determines that it will proceed notwithstanding the application, the hearing will resume with either Ms. Tejane or Mr. Fanamaba, as the case may be. You are hereby given notice that you should be in a position to deal with either witness on the 27th of October. And then it goes on at paragraph 14 to say, accordingly, please treat this correspondence as notice as per your request that the committee will resume its hearings on Thursday, 27 October 2022, unless the committee, having considered the adjournment application, determines otherwise, and you are given notice to be prepared to deal with either or both outstanding witnesses on that day and the following day, Friday, 28 October 2022. So already on the 19th, Mr. Mpofu had been notified of this committee's intention to proceed with the hearings. And I think it's completely misleading to then say that there was no intention on the part of the committee, that notice had not been provided. This was a full week in advance that notice had been provided. I'll leave it there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Bolangola.
Well, thank you very much. I think, Chair, the reason why... one of the members see no need for a further discussion is because we have comprehensively discussed these matters. Chair, I'll just put some few pointers. One, listening from the submission of Advocate Mpofu, where he says there was no termination of services between them, Sianeho, and the Public Protector, and they did not receive any instruction to leave the chamber and leave the Public Protector whilst the inquiry is underway. So it definitely means that the committee has clearly defined what happened as a march out, which I think that was a correct conviction from the committee, listening from all the submissions. There is an issue, Chair, which I think is... can concern me, because there are even sentiments that we may have been part of a denial of legal representation of the Public Protector. I would say, Chair, that in itself equally is not true, on the basis that, Chair, the committee had to adjourn for the public protector to sort out her own issues with her legal team. So at least from where I am seated as part of this committee, we have allowed ample time for the public protector to deal with issues relating or in respect of her legal team. In relation to the reasonable time at which the public protector should lead evidence, I think, Chair, we have always said we adopted the program with some few minor changes in the last committee meeting, but we have always been saying our program is flexible. So where a need immediately arises that there is ample time where Advocate Mbofu and the public protector need an extra time to prepare for the things that Advocate Mbofu mentioned here, that can always be allowed between the chair and the evidence leaders in what we call the back room. So I think, Chair, we have already adopted the program and we're continuing with the program, but still it does not change the fact that our program is indeed flexible for any change any day where a need arises. There is an issue, Chair, of accounts that were that are said to have been displayed for the public and all those things. So I wish to reiterate my point in this view. I wish to reiterate my point in saying there is nothing private, Chair, about public funds. Actually, it has long been a government practice for accountability purposes to know, for the public to know how much has government spent in buying a book, who was appointed to buy that book. Well, it relates to the public funds. It would have been a different case, in my view, of course, had the evidence leaders or the committee publicized the accounts of the law firms that which have rendered services with the Office of the Public Protector. But the issue was solely on the services that were rendered were A, then law firm B got this much. It is still now that kind of practice. You can go to ESCOM, you can go to SOEs, you can go to municipalities, provincial departments. That is the practice. When a service is rendered for accountability purposes, it is declared to the public that this service is going to cost the public this much, and this is the person who's going to do this service on behalf of the people of that particular area or of that particular jurisdiction. The last issue, Chair, which I think I take a serious concern. Now, since I joined Parliament, Chair, I have been part of a complement of a committee that has always championed for an equitable briefing patterns, particularly by government departments. And you know, Chair, fortunately, you are part of that meeting. So I take a serious knock against me and my conscience if I am part of a team that is accused of being racist and all that and all that. It is my view, Chair, that the committee is not racist. But if Advocate Mbofu feels that there are racist elements within the committee, he is free to indicate that to the committee so that we're able to attend to it properly as the committee. The last issue, Chair, relates to the review application. I would wish, Chair, to propose or submit to the committee that, remember, the briefing that we received from Advocate Mbofu was that there is part A that is meant to deal with the interdicting of the proceedings of the committee. And there is part B of the application that is meant to deal with the actual review application. So I want to submit to the committee that until such time, the part A of the application is adjudicated by a court of law and we're interdicted, that we must halt the proceeding until part B is decided. So until such time, I wish to submit that can the proceedings proceed as planned. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Court. Angola, Honorable Gwant. And then Honorable Manel.
Thank you very much, Chair. I also don't want to rehash this discussion we had the last time, and we agreed to forge ahead as a committee. We have a constitutional obligation to ensure that this inquiry goes ahead, and we discharge the obligation that we've been charged with by Parliament. So I would please implore honourable members to keep their eyes on the ball. Let's forge ahead. We've already talked about the walkout. It was a walkout. It was staged. I'm not going to take my words back on that one. And there's been a concerted and a repeated effort to actually stall the proceedings of this inquiry. We've had three recusal applications and one adjournment application. And I'm not going to take my words back on that. I hope Advocate Mboso is listening. And Chair, I would say let's forge ahead. We have two more days to go. It's already late as it is. And yes, and we too have families that we need to see too. So please let's wrap up today's discussion. Let's not rehash what happened. We've discussed it, and I maintain that it was her legal team that denied her of the right to legal representation. It wasn't us. We never chased anyone out, and we were told we don't even know when we're going to see you when Advocate Mbofu walked out. So, Chair, from my side, we've done nothing wrong, and we've been very accommodating, but we also are working against time, and I'm worried that, we might not have time to discharge this obligation that we have as a committee. We've been mandated by Parliament. So, Chair, please ensure that going forward we move with full speed and we finalize what we need to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Gonde. The last one, Honorable Manene.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. Greetings to members and the public protector and the legal team. Chair, maybe just to emphasize two or three points so that I don't repeat more to say I agree that we are proceeding on the basis of a decision taken, which at this point is still informed by a court decision, a constitutional court. And that has not been contested yet. That irrespective of anything else, we need to deal with this with speed. So I'm just saying, I just wanted to emphasize that point. The second point really is that I also welcome, Chair, a confirmation again that the walkout was not a withdrawal. So I welcome that, that there's clarity that there's not been withdrawal. With that in mind, may we then be clarified, Chair, so that when you make your ruling, South Africans out there can also be helped then to understand the meaning of no withdrawal. In that, on the second, just as the public protector was explaining the absence of the legal representatives. In this case, we take it to be those lawyers of record. I'm sure, Chair, if I would count properly, it probably would have not exceeded 5 minutes or so. And this is on record, so it's unless there was an imposter who then said, we represent Sianeho Artemis. So at least we'll forgive that if it was an imposter. And this is the reason I'm raising this, is that on that day, there was a message on the chat which gave an indication to the chair that we are here. And the chairperson followed it immediately and placed it on record so that there's also no misrepresentation to South Africans that they were upset, that they are here. Unfortunately, Chair, we are using another gadget, and that gadget got to be identified. And we therefore proceeded on the basis, like we are proceeding today, that physically, both the public protector and the legal representatives are on that platform. And on that day, the legal representatives were in that platform. Should we disregard that presence on the basis that, as the letter would say, there was totally no representation? It will help you as you make the ruling, Chair, so that South Africans can be taken into confidence whether the contents of the letter then reflect the true reflections of whether that representation was indeed mandated one, or we probably had the intruder in the meeting who played an imposter role of being attorneys where they do not represent those. That's not the Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Maneli. I now quickly want to do a quick summary and a ruling, but I see the hand of Advocate Mpofu. I will briefly allow you, and then I may.
Okay.
The summary.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I promise I won't deal with everything that has been said.
Just before you proceed, Advocate Mpofu.
Okay,
Honorable Nodada, can I recognize you before Advocate Mpofu, because there might be issues you want to raise as clarity?
No, thank you so much, Chair. I thought maybe you were managing me indirectly, but I just want to say that, Chair, I am covered by Honorable Malam, Honorable Gondwe, and Honorable Maneli now in this instance. I don't want to rehash what they have said. But I do think, Chair, that we all have eyes, we all have ears. And I don't think it's fair for us to be taken for fools, or the South African public to be taken for fools for what they've witnessed themselves. And it's important to understand that we are here doing work that we're elected to do as legislators. And it's not by mistake that we proceed within the rules, the constitution of this land, and ultimately what we've been discharged with the parliament. So, I'm not going to go into the merits and demerits of what has been presented. We have discussed this issue, Chair. We've put our views on the table as the committee. We've resolved in the issues. And if it were to me, I would just say whatever has been presented by Advocate Mpofu, noted, and then we move on with our things, because we have discussed things at length, and there's no need for us to be going into detail on them now. And we just note what has been said to us, and then we move on with the process and people participate as instigated by the rules. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Nodada. I suspect that you've learned it. Thank you, Honorable Nodada. Advocate Mpofu. Advocate Mpofu.
Hi, Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, Chair. No, I was sorry, Chair. I didn't realize I was muted. I think I know it's late, so I'm going to try and be brief. But there are one or two things, Chair, that either need further clarity or just a comment. Before I respond to the specific question of clarity from Honorable Zungula, I think Honorable Maneli has maybe dealt with the issue, but I don't know if he understands what I've been saying here. There's a difference between what happened on the 27th and 28th, and everyone seems to be missing this. And the 28th, I explained what happened on the 28th. The public protector came back at the request of the chair. There's no issue about that. And the situation, she clarified, and that's it. But what everyone is missing is to distinguish that between what happened on the 1st and 2nd of November, which is where the violation of human rights and constitutional rights happened. If you don't remember, on the 1st in the morning, the public protector came and told you that her legal representatives were indisposed. They had not withdrawn. They were simply indisposed because they were preparing for the constitutional court papers. And as I said, the chairperson accepted that to the extent that otherwise he could have just said, well, I'm just going to leave the witnesses and they'll never be cross-examined. He didn't do that. He allowed us to cross-examine them today and tomorrow. So he accepted the explanation given by the public protest. So far, so good. The issue we're taking after that is that then at that point, in the same breath, the chairperson then said the proceedings must continue in the absence of the legal representatives of the public protector's choice, and she made it clear. And there's another point that Mr. Manelli is missing. The constitutional court, firstly, he's wrong. There's no constitutional court order that says you must proceed with speed. There's an order. It's a different thing. So whatever is in the document, in the judgment, and an order, those are two different things. There's an order that orders you to afford legal representation, full legal representation, okay? So those two things cannot be equated. And here's the mistake. It's very simple. The original rule, Mr. Manelli, that we took to the Constitutional Court said what you are saying. It said the public protector may appear in the committee in the presence of a legal representative who will not participate in the proceedings. Okay? That's what the rule said. We took that to the Constitutional, to the High Court. We won that was wrong. You appealed and took it to the Constitutional Court. You lost that was wrong. That the mere presence of a legal representation does not mean that there is legal representation. That's what the court said. Your lawyers, your advocates, Advocate Breitenbach was representing you, said that the mere fact that the lawyer is there is enough cover. And the fact that the public protector is legally trained is also sufficient cover. Those arguments were rejected, right, by the High Court and again by the load shedding, and also rejected again by the Constitutional Court. So until anyone understands that point, then we're going to be going on about Mr. Sianejo and all that. No, there was no imposter, Mr. Manelli. Mr. Sianejo was there. But his presence does not amount to legal representation according to the Constitutional Court. Okay? Yeah. So, and number one. Number two, the Constitutional Court said full legal representation. And not just full legal representation, full legal representation by legal practitioners of her choice. She explained that to you on the second. Legal representation of her choice in this case is me and the other counsel, and instructed by Mr. Sianejo. Okay? But even if I was there, to make you even feel better, even if I was there on the old dispensation which was rejected by the Constitutional Court but not participating, that would not be legal representation. So I can't explain that further. Maybe you can get advice on that. So let's not misrepresent what legal representation means. Doesn't mean presence. That's what the court said. The next issue is Honorable Mola. I think I won't speak about most of the things he said. The only issue is the issue of the attack on advocates. If you are saying that nothing about public funds is private, then this committee must give out all the legal fees that have been paid in the matter against the House, which started in 2020, to all the advocates, including the ones that I've mentioned tomorrow. Honorable Umpile, since July, asked this chairperson to give us the figures of the cost of this exercise, because the chairperson said what Honorable Hendricks was saying about 1 million rand a day was wrong. We're now in November. That has not been furnished by you, by this committee. And those are public funds. Nobody displays them as to how much is being spent on this, despite it being asked for. And also, the transparency you're talking about does not only affect black people. So if they wanted to put all the fees of lawyers, they should put the fees of the white lawyers as well, particularly parliament, because it only uses them. So the height of disingenuity to equate this to so-called transparency and public funds. Then we need all the public funds of whoever is being paid what, including the evidence leaders and including all the council, even the ones that are going to represent you next week in the Constitutional Court. So that would be transparency, so that the thugs who go to rob the black people whose names you put there must also visit your own people, if you don't understand that point. So, Honorable Malham, I don't think I need to respond to what he's saying, except to say that it's not true what he's saying. He says, no, the questions were just about superficial things. No, the questions were, did you give instructions to your attorneys? And that's the heartland of client attorney privilege, as to whether you gave instructions on this or that or the other. The record will speak for itself, so I don't need to debate something like that. And yes, the committee did give us notice in their correspondence, but it's not the sole privilege. This is not a dictatorship or Nazi Germany. It's not the sole privilege of the committee to give us the notice. I've told you that we also gave notice of what we were going to do. So why is our notice to be discarded, but only that of the committee? So at best, there was a dispute of notices. But the point I was making was that we made our intentions clear. It was not a secret. It was not a matter of speculation. Did they walk out? Did they withdraw? Did they do that? We told you 1,000 times before, 18, 24, 27, twice on the 27th, what was happening. So if there was still confusion about after that, we're not answerable for that confusion. We can't help it. Okay. And I don't care how Honorable Maham wants to describe it as whether it was disrespectful or whatever. The point is that I'm telling you that our mandate had ended. Either you accept it or you don't, and we could not participate further than our mandate. That's it. And we're not our own. It happens many times that if anyone who understands what the mandate is, once it's terminated, it's terminated at a particular point, and once it expires on the terms that have been explained ad nauseam on the documentation, then it's fine. We could have, if you wanted us to sit there, we could have sat there. But I'm telling you now, if it was a walkout, we wouldn't have told you goodbye or we'll see you or whatever. We'd have just walked out. But I'm not interested in explaining the mechanics of a walkout. All right. Now, the Honorable Sukas, I think what she's saying really amounts to, you know, about human rights, about what you call, you know, let them eat cake, is what was said in France. You tell us about YouTube. Now, we're supposed to legally represent the public protector from YouTube. The Constitutional Court knew that there's something called YouTube when it gave the right to legal representation. Otherwise, it would have ordered that, no, the legal representation must be on YouTube.
James.
So we can't be told that we followed something on YouTube, and therefore that amounts to legal representation. And as for the flare, we have no time for, if you want to tell us that after the public protector explained herself on the 1st and the proceedings proceeded, it was the fault of the very same legal representatives that she had explained were indisposed, that she was unrepresented for those 2 days. Well, that's your privilege, madam. But it doesn't elevate it to something that is true. So we did not leave her without legal representation. She came there, and you are right. We're not answerable to you. We don't account to you. She accounts to you, and that's why she was there. We account to her. All right? And we have no business to be in your presence when it's not necessary or it's not called for. So, but she does. Unfortunately, she had no choice. That's why she was held hostage there for 2 days without legal representation. Not even allowed to go and watch it on Zoom or participate on Zoom. But that's her. She chose to be the public protector. So that's she's suffering for that, yeah. But we don't have to suffer that kind of indignity if we don't have to. All right. Okay, let me just talk to then Honorable Zungula's question. Honorable Zungula, there's nothing much really that I'd like to add as to what will happen. The legal position is exactly what I had explained, that the risk, there are two risks that the committee faces. But we assume that it has calculated those risks and it is prepared to take them on behalf of the South African public. It is that all the million rand a day or whatever the true amount is, that will be spent, that have been spent from the 11th of July up to the time of the hearing of the court case, if it is found that one of those grants is sustainable, will have been wasted. By then it will probably be 100 million rand or more. Because the proceedings will have to be started afresh. That's the first thing. The second thing is that as from the date, which was I think the 17th of October, where the non-recusal application was refused, up to that court ruling, then there would have been potentially contempt of court. And Honorable Milam was correct the last time when we were kicked out of the chamber, that the members have a privilege against being imprisoned for that contempt. But that doesn't change the nature of the contempt of court. The mere fact that you have defied a court proceeding has legal consequences, even though they may be less than for ordinary people like me if I defied a court order. So those are the two risks. One is the risk of nullity and defying the constitution when you have been told that there's going to be a recusal application. I gave you the cases for that say that, and somebody called who calls themselves a professor says it's not part of our law. That could amount to contempt of court. Well, I would invite them to go and read the case of Pikoli versus the president of South Africa. But anyway, it's not a real professor. It's these kind of people who masquerade, who've never seen the door of a courtroom in their lives. But it's that risk. But the biggest risk, I think, if I was a citizen of South Africa watching this, would be that, why is my money being spent on something that might just be a waste of time and breath and people moving up and down to the tune of whatever millions are being spent here, which is in any event illegal and amounts to, according to our court, contempt of court or disregard or then insult to the court. So those are the implications if you continue with your program. But you heard Mr. Nkosi and all the other it's the same. The two parties that have the majority, it's all about numbers. So if the people who have numbers say that it's Saturday today, it doesn't mean that it's Saturday. It just means that those people, they are wrong, but it just means that there are many. So being many doesn't mean you are correct. Law doesn't work like that. You can vote that we are now, today is Christmas Day, and it will carry as a resolution, but it doesn't mean it's correct, objectively speaking. So that's what has happened. So the people who have voted that the inquiry can continue will get their way on that basis, but the legal position will be defined by the court, not by voting, because you know voting is meaningless in terms of the law is an objective subject that applies. It's either it is like this or it's not like that. It's not that we say here and we are more than you who say that it's 2022. If other people say it's 1925 and they vote like that, that's their business. A court will never find like that. It's an absurdity. But that's where we are now, because we're still subjected to the whims of the majority. But in court, we'll be subjected to the whims of logic. Okay, which are two different things. Now, in the last point, Chair. I think it was Mr. Manelli who talked about Part A. Was it Mola Mr. Mola? I don't know where you got that. So I never uttered the words Part A or Part B. But in any event, it's an opportunity to explain that we, in our wisdom, decided, because this is what we were trying to get you to do, to try and save the money of the state by having Part A on Part B and all that. So when you refused to do that, we then decided to do it this way, that we will simply have a review proceedings. That's it. There's no Part A or Part B. Because if we have Part A and Part B, this will take years and years, firstly, to be resolved. But secondly, it will just be a waste of money. The law is like this, again, logic versus majority. The majority of this committee keeps on saying, as someone said today, I think it was Mr. Nkos or Manel, as I say, I confused the two. That will continue until there's an interdict because of the same type of stuff. We'll continue until there's an interdict. Now, it doesn't work like that. You can say that, of course. I mean, nobody can stop you. It's a free country. But you don't need an interdict to do the right thing. So if I say I'm not going to Durban, I can't say I'll go to Durban until there's an interdict that says I can't go there, even if I have no reason to go there. So it doesn't work like that, but that's been the logic here, to say no, unless if there's no interdict, it means we must continue. No, I can say to the chairperson or to Mr. Manelli or anybody, Mr. Manelli, don't go to this place because there's a danger. Don't go back to the Val where you came from because there's some danger there. He can't say, no, I'm going to go there even if there's danger because there's no interdict. I mean, that would be something else. Yeah. So that's, but as I say, the majority, you know, if they vote, they vote, whatever, what can you do? But let's not elevate that to the same level as logical decisions that are based on rationality. The only arbiter for rationality and logic in South Africa are the courts, not mob psychology or the fact that, you know, 20 of us say, as I say, it's Sunday today, and six say that it's Wednesday. Even if the six are right, the court.
Thank you. Thank you. I've
made that point. Yeah. Sorry, I just wanted to clarify the Part A, Part B thing. Thank you, sir. Sorry, that's all from our side.
Thank you, Advocate Mbofu. Colleagues.
Just to make a quick summary and the way forward, the ruling in this matter, having listened to all of you. Mr. Ngoma has flighted the latest letter we received, which was sent to you, the one on the 8th of November, which we received yesterday, 22-4. As I always do on behalf of this committee, I will respond to that letter fully in due course, in line with the decisions of this committee. That's the first point. The second point, Honorable Ngosi is correct. What has been placed on record doesn't change the decision that we took as a committee, which decision says we resumed today, tomorrow, and Friday to conclude the two remaining witnesses, and now after today, the one remaining witness. But tomorrow is Mr. Cornelius von der Merwe and Friday. And that is part of that decision and program, we will pause and resume from the 28th of November. And I know that Honorable Gwep Kondwe had a grief about that. I hope she's over that grief. She had a 17 days grief. Hope you're over that. Because that program, as far as 2022 is concerned, it takes us to the 9th of December. And in December, that's when the National Assembly rises. We rise in December. Because that's, we do work. It's clear in the letter there's a request that proposes the 6th of December. In other words, take 3 days away from the 9th. The backroom of evidence leaders and the public protector legal team, I'm told that they had a brief session yesterday. They will meet again. But if the preference is the 6th of December, that preference must not take anything away from what we planned until the 9th of December. And if it means that you're going to have to ensure that all of what we have identified will be done by the 6th of December, even if it includes working longer hours, that's what is going to do happen. We're not extending it to 2023. So as they meet, if the query is there's 3 days more that you are giving us, take the 3 days, and we happy to settle on the 6th. Mm. Let them do that work, provided that work, as I repeat, doesn't take anything away from what was planned to be concluded on the 9th of December. Because that program takes us, which we account and report to as the committee, it takes us to March as the end point. And we want to follow all of that. We're mindful that we operate in an environment that's not our choosing, but we have a plan that we've put in place, and we're going to follow that plan diligently. And we'll always, as it is a living program, if there are things that come our way, we'll look into those, but that's the planned end point that we have agreed as part of that decision, because that program would have been placed here. Secondly, I think it's important to make this point, because the point is made by Honorable Sukers, which would have also made last week, to emphasize the point about this is an exercise in accountability of a Chapter 9 head of institution to the National Assembly. And in that process, we are all going to be subjected to a parliamentary process and its rules. There is no court determination in that process. Because any of the institutions would have their own rules. If you go to
course, you're going to have norms and standards and all sorts of things that people operate under. You negotiate your way within that. In the legislative sector, you will have rules. You're going to negotiate your way within the rules that are set and the kind of programs that are set. And so whoever comes as part of our oversight to committees, they're subjected to these issues. There's going to be no exception because this is an inquiry. I think it's important to emphasize that point so that the point is not lost in that regard. And so in relation to the program as it is, we'll continue tomorrow. We will hear what Advocate Bauer, what issues she wants to put on record. Thereafter, immediately, we'll start cross-examination of Mr. Cornelius van der Merwe for tomorrow and Friday as planned. I think it must also be said that I think we, without getting into the merits and discussions of it, we note, your placing on the record of denying the walkout, denying any withdrawal. We note that. But I think more importantly and strongly, it's important that we place on record that we deny and reject the following assertions that have been placed on record. That the accusation of rights violations of the public protector, the insinuations about the jungle and the kangaroo court, the illegality of the Section 194 committee, all of those are rejected. And I think it's important that we stay on course, we stay focused in terms of what we want to do in relation to the issues of matters that you have a recourse for to take to court. We welcome that. We've always made that point. In fact, the review would have expected it on the 31st of October as promised to us, because it is on that Thursday that we took a decision to reject the application for adjournment. And so now that matter has been taken to court, that is to be welcome. But it's important to emphasize Honorable Mola's point that nothing stops us in the program that we have placed. There's no legal impediment. There's no interdict. We want to emphasize that point. We're going to proceed even as we straddle, even as we multitask what needs to happen in court, whether it's a constitutional court on the 24th, and whether it is the 13th or 12th of December or any other date in relation to the review application, our work must continue. Thank you very much, colleagues. At that point, I want to say that our meeting is adjourned and we'll meet tomorrow at 10 to resume the cross-examination. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Recording stopped.